talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas on TNT Radio. It's a great pleasure to be back with you, man. And I'm having one of those weeks. Murphy and his law. Yeah, I can tell you, well, if I could tell Murphy what to do with his law and where to shove it, I would. But nevertheless, here we are. And I had the most incredible conversation with probably one of the best journalists in the world, in my view. Her name is Laura Logan. She joined me about 2 weeks ago on my own podcast, and that conversation dropped this morning across Spotify and Apple, etc. And the reason why I'm saying that is because it's one of the most heart-wrenching conversations I have ever had in the 2.5 years that I have been doing a podcast. I had no idea what a great journalist she actually is, and how you know when somebody is really over the mark is when Wikipedia has the worst entry conceivable. So in other words, if somebody is labeled a denier or a conspiracy theorist, I'm already interested, because generally it means that they're doing something good. And if they're heavily attacked by the establishment, it's always a good start. I would strongly recommend you check out my conversation with Laura. She is truly phenomenal. You know, there was a moment in our conversation where I nearly started crying for the first time ever. She was replaying the story of when she was covering the Egyptian revolution in 2011. And she was gang raped, like the real deal, by a mob. And she thought that she was going to die. Her clothes were ripped off. She was sodomized. She was harassed, and of course, she was physically raped. And you know what is utterly disgusting is how some journalists in the traditional legacy media were trying to downplay that. And the reason why they were trying to downplay that is obviously because she is slightly more conservative, slightly more anti-mainstream, slightly more counter-narrative. And that doesn't gel. So therefore, she must be making up the story. And I do know that there are cases in which rape has been overplayed and the definition has been adjusted. And of course, these days, just whistling at a woman, you know, sexual harassment. As my wife often says, you know, she wishes that guys would still whistle at her because it means that she still has something to offer. She says, because one day when she's too old and nobody whistles anymore, you know, then she's past her sell-by date. But, you know, I'm listening to Laura tell me her story, and she's telling me a bunch of other stories as well. I mean, she's a war correspondent. And what is absolutely fascinating is how diametrically opposite reality is when you're talking about the mainstream or the legacy media, the corporate media. You wouldn't think that what is going on there is actually largely to do with the West. You know, when we talk about war reporting, we're often talking about Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya and Yemen and even Ukraine. And this idea of Western exceptionalism is something that has stuck with me, oh man, probably up until a year ago. I have always thought that we in the West are fantastic. We're the best. There's no stopping us. And what this pseudo-pandemic has opened my eyes to is how utterly inverted my own view of the world is. And I say we in the West. I live in South Africa, so I've got this weird kind of middle ground position because South Africa is part of BRICS. So geopolitically, we have this friendly relationship with Russia and with China and India and Brazil. But, you know, within our own country, there's a huge amount of mixed opinions on, you know, for example, on Russia. And when you hear about people like Laura and even Rachel Blevins, who is a reporter at RT, and how much hatred they receive for reporting on what is actually going on, and how people try to silence and censor them, it makes me realize that we are not exceptional. It makes me realize that the bastion of freedom, which is the West, is absolutely not the bastion of freedom. When a company like YouTube, which is the largest video platform in the world, just openly censors and silences and removes stuff, removes content because it doesn't align with its views, makes me realize that there's something very wrong with my own perception. Now, I don't use much social media, but I know that there are networks like VK, etc., that don't censor. So what's going on? I mean, I chatted to the editor of Guardian last night, Kit Knightley, and he made the suggestion that is what we think even about North Korea true? I mean, if North Korea was, and I'm not being apologetic. I have a feeling that North Korea is a tragedy. But he makes an interesting point. Why hasn't anybody from the West invaded North Korea to bring about freedom and democracy? I mean, North Korea is quite possibly the most secretive, most suppressed country that we know of. And you have to horseshoe back to the idea that it has nothing to do with people. It has everything to do with money and power. And that seems to be an ongoing theme in this idea of Western exceptionalism. And as I said, Laura Logan exposes this very beautifully as a great journalist. I have a feeling that my guest who's coming up is going to agree with me. So I'm very excited to chat to him. So let's do that. This is TNT Radio. My name is Jim.
In depth and under discussion.
The government works for us, not the other way around.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, I'm sorry to keep you at your desk, Rick.
Okay.
Thank you for joining
us. Where else would I be, my friend? This is where I live now. I don't venture too far away from it. This is my home, my friend. I'm just sitting at home right now.
Rick Munn, fellow colleague at TNT, I've just taken over from you. It was your show in the last hour. So thank you for joining me. And do you agree with my analysis of how inverted our perceptions are?
100%. I mean, inversion's a word that crops up a lot when I'm talking to the various guests that I have on, whether that be an inversion of truth, an inversion of morals, an inversion of ethics, an inversion of science, an inversion of society. The world is basically an inverted place as per right now, and a lot of bubbles are bursting when people are slowly realizing that maybe we are the bad guys, by and large. I'm talking about our governments or the people that make the decisions on our behalf. We're the bad guys. And to the point now where when people speak to me outside of, you know, my circle, they'll say, isn't it terrible, terrible what's happening in Ukraine? Isn't Putin an evil guy? I wish God would just strike him down. I'll say, well, what about Joe Biden? What about Biden? What do you think about him? Oh, he's a good man. What about Boris Johnson? He's a good man. What about Justin Trudeau? He's a good man. Why? Because the TV said so, and because these people don't know what the real underlying character of these so-called leaders and politicians are. So yeah, inversion, Jeremy, is just something that's, it's the pandemic. There's a pandemic of inversion in our society and a pandemic of inversion in the world. Everything that's good is called evil, and everything that's evil is called good. And what's true is called lies, and what's lies is called truth. And that's the position that we're at right now. So I agree 100%.
Doesn't it make you question what is real and what is true. I never thought that I'd be saying this 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. I kind of thought that I'd figured it all out.
Yeah, well, put it like this. I came to the party quite late in that prior to March 2020, I just was a normal guy living my life. I kept an eye on things and it was aware of some things like, is the moon landing real? Who really knocked down the Twin Towers? Who really shot JFK? That was about the height of my interests or my examination into the darker side of things, of the possibility that our governments are actually out engineering wars and fighting proxy wars and, you know, doing things that are to our detriment rather than to our benefit. So I only started looking into this when the lockdowns came around. And for the first month, I was caught up in the hysteria along with everybody else. And then I slowly started to come around after about 4 weeks and went, hang on, something stinks here. Something isn't just right here. So I started to dig, started to connect with people who were putting forward theories, which I discounted immediately because it didn't fit in with what I thought was the truth. And then when you start to dig and realize that if you want the truth, let me say this, anyone out there, if you want the truth, you take what the government is telling you and you flip it on its head, then you'll have the truth. They're not being honest about anything. Please, if you can, point me to something honest and virtuous and true that the government is putting before you. And I'll be shocked if you can do that. They're hypocrites. They're pathological, habitual liars. So if you want the truth, my friend, just flip what the government says, flip what the news says, flip what the media says, and you'll have the truth.
I remember back in the late 90s, my mother gave me a book by David Icke, and I read it and I thought, this is nonsense. Yeah, it's great. It's great entertainment. And I feel like I owe him an apology.
Yeah, he's a funny one. I, again, didn't pay any attention to him until, you know, a year or two ago. And he still has, you know, listen, no one can call everything perfect, okay? So you'll come out with theories and ideas, and some of them will be bang on. Some of them will be off the mark. I'm the same. This is just my opinions on things. Yep. With any of your guests, they're giving opinions. Icke gave a lot of predictions way back in the 80s and into the 90s, and he was discounted as a loon. He was demonized and vilified by the mainstream media back then. I remember him on a talk show in the UK, an Irishman called Terry Wogan, who famously said, David, they're laughing at you. They're not laughing with you. And that was the beginning of the end of his broadcasting career, because he was a sports analyst and a sports pundit. So he was cancelled. He wrote some books, I believe, and the publishers pulled the plug on those also. He then self-published. And if you listen back to what he said in 98, he called just about everything that's happening now back in 1998 or before that. But the more outlandish theories that he had, for example, about the royal family being lizard people, that was almost a bridge too far for some people. But let's be brutally honest. You know, he got everything else right. And as crazy and as lunatic as it sounds, and I'm not saying that that's what I do believe, but if Her Majesty was to manifest as a reptile on TV tonight, I wouldn't be in the slightest bit surprised. So, yeah,
well, I mean, I think a lot of people. We've all seen the prince. I mean, look at Charles. Yeah. Look at him. I mean, there's something quite lizardy about his face.
And his fingers. I don't know if you've seen his fingers or not, but he has very odd fingers, my friend. Yeah, the royal family are a strange breed or inbreed, yeah, and I mean, depending on how you look
at. And there's something horsey about his wife as well. So, I mean, there's definitely an animal thing going on there.
There is. But you're right. A lot of the wackos, in inverted commas, from the 80s and the 90s are actually turning out to be bang on. Alex Jones is obviously another one. You know, he was banging the drum and blowing the trumpet for a very long time. And yeah, pretty much everything that he has called has come to pass.
I love Alex Jones. Rick, Alex for me is fantastic. I don't listen to him much, but when I do listen to him, I thoroughly enjoy him. Let me tell you why. He is the only TV guy, presenter, host, whatever he is. He's the only person who can stand in front of a camera and tell the camera to come closer to him. You know, with that voice, he'll go, "What am I about to tell you? Come closer." And he's the only guy who can pull that off. It is so cheesy. Yep. And I love it.
he's certainly, again, listen, he's a polarizing character. But if you look at his track record for calling it, he's pretty much on the ball. And I dare say other things that are still being dismissed as outlandish from the like of Ike and the like of Alex Jones, we will see them come to pass over the not too distant future, because, you know, you can join the dots in this, Jeremy. It's way one way, you know.
But that's also the problem, Rick. When you're on the vanguard, you're always going to run the risk of getting things wrong or being called a lunatic.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I see it is, I have a very simple caveat that I add to everything that I say personally, and it's this: time will tell. Okay, so time is a great revealer of all theories and all, hypotheses. Give it enough time and apply it for long enough to society, and you'll see whether or not it's completely off the wall, it's completely ludicrous, or actually it's bang on. And whereas in the past we had to wait 10 or 15 or 20 or more years to see if a conspiracy was a reality, at the moment we're waiting 18 months. All right, so the time frame has shrunk from 10 to 15 to 20 years down to 18 months. So what we called last year vaccine passports, mandatory vaccinations, climate lockdowns, universal basic income being brought in, not being allowed to leave your own country, etc. That was the stuff of conspiracy 12 to 18 months ago, but it's happening. It's happened and it's continuing to happen today. We don't have to wait 20 years, Jeremy. It's happening within the space of a year to a year and a half.
Yeah, but the idea of conspiracy theorists being a pejorative, I think, is silly. I understand that people like to use it because they don't quite know why they're saying it. But yes, what's interesting, the term conspiracy theorist was weaponized by the CIA in the late 1960s, right? People don't seem to understand this, that when they are calling you a conspiracy theorist, what they're essentially doing is two things. They're trying to discredit you or anything that you're about to say, and B, they're perpetuating a psyop that was actually part of a directive from the CIA. And all that happened was people started questioning the assassination of JFK. They didn't like the official story from that came out of the Warren Commission report. And so the CIA issued a directive to all its bureaus saying, well, we need to use this term as a way to discredit and to silence critical thinking. And that term has just become part of the zeitgeist. But when someone calls you a conspiracy theorist, they're actually just saying that you're a critical thinker.
Correct. Funny enough, you mentioned critical thinker. I have a notebook here, and I make notes for different guests. And this is something that I've highlighted and I'm going to read out now. It just simply says critical thinking. What is it? Because people say, well, what is a critical thinker? And how do you think critically? How can you define something that's so broad and so all encompassing? So there's a guy I have on regularly, a guy called Toby Brown, and he defines it as this. And if you're listening or you want the definition of what critical thought is, this is bang on, in my opinion. It says critical thinking is the intellectually disciplined approach of actively and skillfully evaluating information gathered from or generated by observation, by experience, by reflection, or by reasoning as a guide to your beliefs and actions. In other words, you don't take it as gospel. You don't take it as rote. You've got a set of circumstances. You've looked into it. You put them all together. You take a step back. You analyze every aspect. And then you come to a decision, or then you make an action. That's what critical thought is. But as you say, it was demonized and weaponized and rebranded as a conspiracy theorist. And it's now a badge of dishonor amongst the normies. But in reality, you know, it's a validation for us to be branded as a conspiracy theorist.
It's just weird to me, Rick, because every time somebody uses the term, or I see it as a headline in, you know, on a news website, I don't quite understand what their end goal is by using the term. Because are they suggesting that, oh, so-and-so is just a conspiracy theorist, or they're spreading conspiracy theories? What is the implication of that statement? Are they suggesting that humans don't conspire? Are they suggesting that Julius Caesar was not conspired against 2,000 years ago?
Yeah.
Are they suggesting, you know, it's so Monty Python-esque that it's laughable.
There's a lot of power in a name, but okay, there's a lot of power in a name. So depending on how I can label you as something accurately, But depending on the words that I used, it can be a very positive or a very negative thing. So it's much better to be, in their eyes, to brand us as conspiracy theorists than to brand us as critical thinkers. So they will never write a headline to say, Jeremy Nail is a dangerous critical thinker, because it by default implies that people who don't agree with you are not engaging in critical thought, if you understand. Whereas when they say, well, he's a conspiracy theorist, well, I don't identify with him, so I'm not embracing strange way out thoughts and ideas about what be happening in society. The wording is very important, and your reference back to the CIA, Warren Commission, JFK, turn it around and make it something that's bad or has negative connotations. That's the position that we're in now.
Rick, don't go anywhere. We're going to go to an ad break. This is Germ and Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
John Matlin on TNT Radio.
So many people across the nation that are, you know, Republicans, conservatives, they do not want to talk to me because I am going against that system and I am bringing real voice to real people. The former host of Radio Red Nation Rising, he also served in elected local government positions in Massachusetts. Timothy, are you with us?
I am. President Trump is like an icebreaker, right? He rams a channel through the deep-packed ice. But if we don't follow him with the flotilla of ships, all those chunks of ice will re-knit at the stern and refreeze, and it'll be like President Trump never went through. He said, America cannot exist as a constitutional republic if we don't follow him with a flotilla of America First candidates to keep that channel clear, keep these policies alive, and truly change the direction that America is heading.
John Matlin on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
The radio station everyone is talking about, TNT, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening. Keep listening. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm busy riffing with fellow TNT colleague Rick Munn, and I strongly recommend you listen to his show. If not, just for his accent. Rick, I love your accent.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate your kind words. You demonized the Irish a little at the start when you complained about Murphy's Law. And of course, Murphy is an Irishman, and you were saying you didn't like it and you would deal with Murphy. So I took that as a little bit offensive, but you've redeemed yourself. You've redeemed yourself with your comments on my accent. So I appreciate that.
Speaking of Ireland, I'm trying to think. Ireland is beautiful, but I can't think of that many great exports. Bono is a total disappointment. And what else? What else have you got? Potatoes.
We only have two things. All right. We only have two exports. Potatoes and Guinness. That's it. So
Guinness.
That's what we tried the Titanic. You know, it sank on its maiden voyage. That was an export of Northern Ireland. We had George Best, who drank himself to death. There's an international airport named after him. And we also had a world champion snooker player called Alex Higgins, also a great talent, who also drank himself to death. So we export famous alcoholics, potatoes and Guinness. Apart from that, Jeremy, that's it, my friend. Just that's it. And me now, of course, I'm now an export.
And you have you too, which I don't know if how is U2 in Ireland? Are they loved?
Well, put it like this. Back in the day, they have been going since the 80s. And one of the biggest, you know, releases of the 80s.
They were great back then, by the way.
They were. One of the greatest releases, or the best selling anyway, was the Joshua Tree. You know, it really catapulted them to stardom. And, you know, listening to Bono, he seems to be the mouthpiece for the band. The rest kind of fall in line. You know, he's an out-and-out globalist big time. They're horrible musically at the moment. They did a surprise gig allegedly in a underground bunker in Ukraine, and they had some Ukrainian soldiers singing with them. Bono was sort of upstaged by a Ukrainian soldier, and I'm not exaggerating. They butchered Stand By Me by Benny King. Let's stop talking about them. It's horrible. They're a horrible bunch.
I was just about to say another good export is whiskey. I'm a whiskey fan, but Ireland spells whiskey differently. I think, what is it? It's there's no E. Is that correct?
No E. There's a Y. And actually, one of the oldest distilleries, if not the oldest distillery in the world, is about 60 miles from my house. It's a place called Bushmills, so that you can buy Bushmills whiskey or Black Bush whiskey, which is one of the best whiskeys in the world. The distillery dates back officially to around about 1690, something like that. And they're still operating off the original site. So yeah, we export that as well. We export all things that are bad for you if taken in great quantities, potatoes included, by the way. We also make alcohol from potatoes. We make a very potent brew called Potsheen from potatoes that is almost 100% proof and is so strong that it can literally blind you if you take a glass without diluting it down. That's the truth. Potsheen.
Look, just to make you feel a bit better about yourself, I'm from South Africa and we're on the African continent and we have nothing going for us other than perhaps wildlife and a failed state. And by the way, a failed state is a great place to be when you are trying to escape digital ID tyranny. The last 2.5 years, our government has been so inept and so absolutely useless at oppressing us. So it's been great to be in the failed state, I'll tell you that much. But other than that, we don't have much going for us.
I've been to Africa. I've actually been to Africa many times, maybe 20 times, maybe more over the space of 12 years. So I'm well-traveled in East Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and Rwanda. Those are places that I know quite well. So yeah, fruit, there's some fantastic fruit comes out of Africa, and the sunshine is hard to beat when it's a good day. But yeah, fruit, let's take something positive. There's good fruit, good mangoes come from Africa. Let's give them their dues. Yeah.
And as it turns out, the world's richest, I don't know, I think he is a globalist, but the world's richest man is from Africa, Elon. He grew up in Pretoria.
Did.
Do you think, what are your views on him?
I'll be honest with you. I'll cut straight to the chase. I mean, let's put it in the balance here. Okay. People are saying he's the savior. Some people say he's part of the architects of our doom. All right, so let's look at what he's putting on the table. He's developing the Neuralink brain implant. And I mean, I have a list of quotations here from Elon Musk. People are saying, well, he's developing that to help people. He wants to help the lame to walk and the blind to see. Yes, he says that's a secondary benefit, but he wants to more closely couple the human mind with information processing. Okay, so you're talking neural implants. He's developing a fleet of electric vehicles, contributing towards the green agenda. And if you want to get environmental on it, the materials that are being used to put into those cars, strip mining in the Congo and child labor, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he is being put forward as a herald of free speech, but he's also a big proponent of the vaccine. He's been very vocal in supporting the rollout of the vaccine program. And when he appeared on the Joe Rogan, his last appearance, I think, on the Joe Rogan podcast, even might have been 2 years ago, pre what's happening right now, he said, listen, this pandemic is only a taste of what will come next. There'll be a lot of young people dying, one thing and another. I'm not buying into the Elon Musk hype, personally speaking. You know, he's not affecting my life directly, but I don't put any faith in the guy at all. None whatsoever. I can't see what he's doing to help the cause.
Yeah, I said to my wife today that I've got a soft spot for him, and that's probably because he comes from my country. But and he's got this craziest accent because of that. And he makes the right noises, and yet you have to pair that with his actions, and his actions are not necessarily all that trustworthy, or they're not necessarily all that noble. Well, they could be noble, but nobility doesn't mean much. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. So I'm not particularly interested in how noble it is, but I am interested in what his actions are. And that Neuralink story is concerning. And also the satellites, you know, Catherine Fitz. Yeah, Catherine Fitz once said, you know, whoever controls the sky, you know, controls data.
Well, here, let me give you a quote from Elon Musk, all right? This is from Musk himself. I have a little page or two in my folder of quotes from Elon Musk. Let me see. Yes, so Musk expressing his opinion on lockdowns, for example, he made the right noises. He said, forcibly imprisoning people in their homes is against all of their constitutional rights. So people say, okay, you know, that's a good thing. There's hope. But you know, you talk about noble acts and philanthropy. You know, nobody's more philanthropic on paper than Bill Gates, but he ain't one of the boys. You know, we could say, oh, he's pumping billions into this and he's helping people that and he's funding this and that and the other. And most people think he's a good guy. Most of these evil sods have a streak or a public appearance to make them look approachable and to make them look like they actually give a damn about mankind. Yeah, that quote that you've just came out with, the one who controls data will control the world, especially applies to Elon Musk. He said in May of 2020 on the Joe Rogan podcast, he said at some point there will probably be a pandemic with a high mortality rate, something that's killing a lot of 20-year-olds, let's just say, killing large numbers of young, healthy people. And then I quote, this, as in COVID, is practice. For something like that, it is just a matter of time. And he was very vocal in endorsing the COVID vaccines. Now, concerning Neuralink, on a TED interview that he did on the 17th of April, which is only, what, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, concerning Neuralink, he said the primary goal, and this is what's important, the primary goal is to more tightly couple the collective human world to digital superintelligence. That's the driver behind Neuralink. That's the primary driver. He then says, and along the way, so you have your benevolence built in here, along the way, solve brain injuries and spinal injuries, that kind of thing, quote, end of quote. Mm. So primary and secondary objectives. He says we are already cyborgs. The computer is simply an extension of ourselves. And if we take out a section of skull in relation to Neuralink, the size of a quarter, we will replace it with a Fitbit Apple Watch kind of smart watch kind of thing. So he's almost like acting dumb when he's talking about his own products. But in reality, you know, the surveillance thing, you know, come on. He's got all the markings of a globalist demon, as far as I can see. You know, that's just my observation.
What are some of your big red pill moments? I wanted to ask you before the break earlier and I forgot, so I was going to quickly horse you back there. But I mean, I've had some seriously big red pill moments. What have been some of yours?
Well, for me personally, it was the first lockdown. Okay, the first lockdown in March of 2020, after about a month, I came to the realization that there was something seriously amiss. And when I saw the buy-ins of the so-called church, as well as the medical profession, and I'm talking all faiths here, by the way, it wasn't just the Christians and the Jews and the Buddhists and the Islamic, every denomination seemed to close their doors. People being told to stay at home, not visit their family members. And then I looked at and the data started coming out to say the average age of death is 82 years and 4 months, right? And the average age of death from old age is 81. So you're more likely to die of old age than you are of COVID. But yet they were trying to keep us all apart and ramping this up to be something very, very sinister. Their figures were grossly over-exaggerated. Neil Ferguson in the UK, modeled every outbreak of everything that was deemed to be bad over the last 15 to 20 years and got it horrendously wrong, was coming out with crazy numbers. Our health minister said there's going to be biblical proportion deaths in Northern Ireland, 15,000 people dead. Within a week, that was revised to 1,500 people. And off COVID, the deaths still over here, maybe less than 100. I don't know. So I started to smell a rat. And when I smelt the rat from that, then I dug. And when I dug, then other things came to light. And I started communicating with people like Patrick Henningsen and with people like that are running this station. on Twitter, because I'd never been on Twitter. Yeah. And then my circle expanded and I got more provoked to dig further. And here I am today talking to you. So that's the long and short of it.
But I mean, what other Red Bulls? What other inversions of reality have struck you?
Well, to be honest, I mean, like, I have been under no illusions growing up in life. I mean, like, I spent, you know, most of my young childhood and teen years growing up in Northern Ireland, where there was a lot of sectarianism, a lot of religious bigotry, people being killed on a day-to-day basis. And obviously, both sides were positioning that they were right and the other side was wrong and they were the good guys, the other side was the bad guys. And then you start digging into that, watching documentaries about just even the place that you live, and you realize the amount of corruption on governmental level and on you know, people working together behind the scenes that were mortal enemies in front of the cameras. You know, things like that started to make me really question and apply that that concept of inverting everything the government tells you to be true if you want to actually get the truth. That was really it, Jeremy. It was really March of 2020 that started the ball rolling. And from that point, I just started looking into more things. And I don't go too far into it, because a lot of it's futile. So what if you find out the Earth's round or a ball or a pyramid or a sausage shaped, cucumber floating in space? Does it affect the inflation? Does it affect what's happening to us on a personal and social level? No. I think a lot of people are wasting and investing a lot of time into trying to prove or disprove things that really don't matter a damn in the everyday world. So I try not to take too many red pills, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And it's something that I'm constantly fighting myself over. Mm-hmm. You know, what matters in terms of what is true? Because you'll end up not sleeping. You know, you'll end up just constantly taking antidepressant pills because you are so anxious. You know, you've been overwhelmed by anxiety because now you look around you and you're thinking, well, is that true? Well, is that real? Is that false? But to me, there are some things that do matter. So the flat Earth thing is something that I don't think Earth is flat, by the way, but I absolutely love the conversations, okay? Because those conversations have led me to thinking about so many other things. And also, I've said this before, and you're correct, I agree with you, that whether or not the Earth is round or flat doesn't matter that much because it doesn't change our day-to-day living. It is interesting to me to know what might be the truth, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it. But I do think, for example, knowing whether or not SARS is real, in my world, that matters. Because that dramatically changes the way in which I view health and illness and infection. So for me, trying to figure out what is real medically is so important. But even that is met with so much resistance. If you go around saying that COVID is not real, watch what happens.
Yeah. You know, you got to strike a balance, Jeremy, and that whole business of red pilling. People think they have to be extremists. You know, they have to get to the bottom of every so-called conspiracy theory. They have to make sense of everything that's set before them. They have to dissect it down and provide long threads of justification and evidence and cross-references and references to people that have done two-hour videos on it. But the bottom line is, my friend, personally speaking, we need to be made aware of what's affecting us in this world. But even the stuff, if we do get to the bottom of it, we can do nothing about. Take chemtrails, for example, and maybe we'll talk about this if we take a short break. But I had a discussion with a guest earlier on about this. If they're real, okay, and they are poisoning the skies, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Can you stop it? Are you going to get a rally together to stop it? If you can't stop them vaccinating children in schools, you're not going to stop them spraying chemical poisons in the air. Do you understand? So there's even if you do find the truth out and you make a song and dance about it, the planes are still flying, or maybe it's just water vapor. Either way, the price of milk is going up as we speak. And that's something that concerns me a hell of a lot more, because that's something I can have some kind of control over, and petrol as well.
Yeah. Well, be careful now, because you have you have this resistance to milk as well, Rick. How dare you drink milk?
Yeah, I know what, my carbon footprint's getting worse by the day.
Tell you what, let's quickly cut to a break. So yeah, let's do that. So my name is Germ, and I am chatting with TNT colleague Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
The Biden administration begs for more oil, at the same time saying we need less oil. Confused? So is the CNN anchor.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Biden's Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm demanded oil companies make massive investments to increase supply now, while simultaneously demanding they shut down oil within a decade. Here's the clip.
Are you telling me you want them drilling for more oil? You want the refineries putting out more gasoline in 5 or 10 years?
What we're saying is today we need that supply increased. Of course, in 5 or 10 years, actually in the immediate, we are also pressing on the accelerator, if you will, to move toward clean energies.
Yes, you heard that right. More oil now, less oil now. This passes for logic in the wacky world of the climate agenda. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Interview conducted at 10:15. Present are Sergeant Jones, PC Clough, Mr. Wall, an uninsulated cavity wall, and his solicitor, Mr. Bent. Do you understand the charges?
I shall be speaking for Mr. Wall on account of him being a pile of bricks.
Right, you're accused of wasting energy, Mr. Wall, and we've got concrete evidence. We know that unfilled cavity walls are responsible for up to a third of all home energy wastage.
We also believe you're involved in a fencing operation.
We're going to throw the book at you.
Okay. Mr. Wall would like to say ouch.
It's criminal to waste energy. To find out how to save up to 25% off your heating bills, visit saveenergy.co.uk or call 0845 727 7200.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several Soros-backed DAs are facing recall petitions, including George Gascon, DA of crime-riddled Los Angeles, and Pariza Degani-Tafti from Arlington County and City Falls of Church, Virginia. Steve DeSano of Fairfax County, Virginia, elected in 2019, endorsed a progressive platform typical of the left-wing DA faction, making official policy not to prosecute more than 20 different crimes, including shoplifting for goods under $1,000, prostitution, and indecent exposure. Loudoun County District Attorney Bhuta Bibaraj, who championed anti-incarceration, made headlines for personally seeking jail time for Scott Smith, a father who was arrested for misdemeanor disorderly conduct at Loudoun County School Board meeting, while protesting the school board's cover-up of his 14-year-old daughter's rape in a school bathroom. Bibaraj is now facing a recall petition.
As Joe Biden negotiates his way out of the room,
we don't negotiate with the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Beth, who is listening in Johannesburg, Rick, she says, look, we must take one red pill at a time.
There you go. I agree with that one, Beth.
And that's exactly what I've been doing the last 2.5 years. I must tell you, I've often been wondering about what is true and what is not true, but not to the extent that I do now. In the years BC, before COVID, I kind of had a fair amount of faith, dare I say, in many establishment views. I don't anymore. I think Curtis Yarvin, great computer programmer and philosopher, he coined the term the cathedral, which essentially is academia plus media plus government. If you question them, you're an apostate. And I think you and I are probably heavy, heavy apostates.
For sure. What we have has grown up over the last 2 years is the greatest cult in history, which is the Branch Covidians. You had Waco and David Koresh, and that's another questionable series of events, you know, the whole background between the ATF attack on Waco and the place burning to the ground, who was actually responsible for doing that. That's another one to go into, but he had a cult called the Branch Davidians. And effectively what we've seen over the last 2 years is the rise and the expansion of the Branch Covidian cult, whereby if you question anything that's outside of what the cult leaders say, which is the cathedral, as you mentioned, you know, the media with academia, with science and government, you mix that all together. And if you deviate away from that, you speak out against that, you could be shunned. Or, you know, like the Amish people, if you don't know if you follow any other, you know, religious practices. But yeah, well, if you fall out, if you deviate from the Amish, as much as they love you and will accept you, you will be shunned. If you leave the family and you leave the faith, they will set your table. They set a place for you at breakfast and at dinner to remind your brothers and sisters and your mother and father that you have walked away from the faith and walked away from the community. They call it shunning. So a lot of shunning happened over the last few years. If you didn't, for example, take your vaccine, if you didn't wear your face mask, if you didn't do what the science said, you would be shunned and demonized and called all sorts of names. My friend, it's one of the biggest cults out there. You know, you can break that down into cult behaviors and cult leadership and cult brainwashing techniques. They've all been applied over the last 2 years in great, great, great numbers.
I interviewed the editor of Covert Action magazine, Jeremy Kuzmarov, recently. In fact, he was on TNT Radio, I think, last week with me. And I asked him about Waco, Texas. Because if you think about it, right, they were essentially a church, a fairly small one. At what point is a church so threatening that you have to go in with tanks? I mean, what was the most they had with them? Weapons, guns. And the CIA or FBI, I can't remember who it was now, came in with basically a military. I mean, something does not add up.
I know. And the guy who ran it, you know, David Koresh, again, you know, what do you personally actually know about him apart from what has been told to you about him by the media and even people? How do you actually verify? How could you ever verify who I really am, what my background really is, unless someone that knows me tells you that? Because you've never met me. You don't know the real me. You're only going by your perception of me or by what other people say about me. Now, I didn't get into this and I'm not going to get into this now, but the fact is this guy was painted up to be a religious fanatic, which arguably he was. He had some very skewed takes on the Bible, which he did. That's not under any question. Did he get involved with multiple partners, father, multiple children? Do God knows what? Possibly. But the end result was tanks went in there, the place burnt to the ground, there was a lot of children killed, and the finger was pointed at him to say, well, he opened fire on ATF agents in America, so they had to send the big boys in, and that was the end result. And they said he was planted, you know, petrol everywhere, and he was ready to torch the place, so of course he did it. Yeah, I'm not saying he didn't do it, but if the media tell me he did it, I would have to be putting a big question mark over that one as well. I'll park that one to the side for further research, you know.
And that same kind of cynicism that we have now expands right across the board to JFK. There's, in my view, there's no possible way that Lee Harvey Oswald took that shot. He was a decoy. In my view, Osama bin Laden was a decoy. We know already that he was funded by the CIA. Marilyn Monroe, how she died is absolutely not the official story. 9/11, oh my word, there is a massive one. I'm actually chatting on my podcast tonight to a guy called Bart. Oh, no, not tonight. In a few weeks' time. I've now gone blank. You see, this is what happens now. I'm riffing
you're
too much.
And about
I'm now
forgetting. You're talking 9/11, about 9/11 sorry. Being the mother, I suppose, the mother of all red pills.
Yes.
That's the best way to put it.
It was a massive red pill. The guest I'm chatting to tonight on my podcast is actually about the moon landing being also not real. I have been convinced that the Apollo missions did not happen.
Agree with
and
that.
This
I
is
think
the
it's
thing
fake.
Though. Yes, 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 yes. But this is the thing. So you end up looking at all these major events, and I can't see an official story that actually is true.
that's why, you know, the old advice your listener gave about one red pill. You know, you can overdose on any kind of medication, Jeremy. If you take enough paracetamol, you take too many of them at one time, it's going to kill your liver. Your liver's going to die. If you take too many sleeping tablets or whatever, you mix them in with alcohol, you're going to die. You take too many red pills at one time, you may not die physically, but your brain will turn to mush. And I mean mush, you'll just lose it completely.
You know, speaking of pills, I think too many red pills, you're correct, are a bad thing. You know, yeah. It starts off with the blue pill, and, you know, thank heavens for the Matrix for bringing that idea into the zeitgeist. The blue pill is essentially everything is as you see it is, right? And you trust everybody and everything, and it's rainbows and unicorns. The red pill is when you go, well, hang on a second. Wait, have I been lied to? Something is not right here. There's a fabrication. Then you move on to that purple pill where you know that you've been lied to. You know that there are fabrications, but you're like, you know what? It's easier just to go back to rainbows and unicorns. So you go back to the start. And I think after that, you end up with that sort of black pill problem where it becomes nihilistic. And you don't wake up with a purpose and a meaning, and everything is just rubbish. What is the point? You know, everything is just manipulated, and everything is deception. You know, what's the point? That's a very bad place to be, I think. I think you need to get past that and realize actually there's a Lord of the Rings metaphor. You know, you've got Frodo, the most unexpecting hero. And you have to always realize that there is always hope, despite all those battles that are going on either side of you. You know, you have to always look to the end goal, surely.
Mm-hmm. You do. If I could sum up this business of, you know, awakening and having yourself being rocked by the actual reality of what happens in the world, what has happened or what hasn't happened, is what's the most important thing? The most important thing is that not that you get to the bottom of exactly how 9/11 happened and who exactly led the charges and what the exact machinations for that are. The fact is it was done by the government upon their own people. That's the takeaway.
Yes,
it doesn't matter exactly who shot JFK or whether there were two shooters or three shooters or the crime scene was compromised. The fact is he was bumped off by his own people. That's the takeaway from 9/11. That's as much as I need to know. So you can overextend, as you have said, but the most important thing is that you come to the point where when the next thing is set before you, for example, if they push the monkeypox narrative or they push sudden adult death syndrome or whatever it happens to be, or the conflict in Ukraine, instead of just embracing it like we might have done in the past and taking what the government says as gospel, we actually stop immediately and say, hang on a minute. We need to examine this more carefully before we buy into this or discard it completely, which goes back into that definition of critical thinking. You need to analyze, you need to observe, then you need to take all the evidence, weigh it up and say that's a goer or that is to be discarded. So yeah, you can go too far the opposite direction with the red pilling going to a purple pill or going to a black pill. Listen, just understand you've been lied to, you've been manipulated by your governments. They're not the good guys. And you need to make sure you look after number one and the people that are in your family. You're a husband, you're a father. You worry about your wife and kid. Don't worry too much about who ultimately killed JFK. I'm not really too worried about how they faked the moon landing or whether it happened or not. All I know is the government, they're liars. And I'm trying to just live my life around that and protect those that are nearest and dearest to me at the minute. Look after what's on your doorstep, because the old red pilling is also a distraction to take you away from the tasks at hand. All right, who's going to pay the bills this month? Is your wife having a bad day? Is she needing support? Never mind talking to me or doing the radio show or doing your podcast. What about your wife? What about your kids? What about your mother, your father, your brother, your sister, your friends in real life? Are they getting neglected at the expense of you going down a rabbit hole? If that's yes, then the government have you. The government have you. You're not having them. They have you.
Well, not just the government. I think the public-private partnerships that are higher than the government. You know, I mean, you've got the Gates Foundation and the Rockefeller Foundation, and you've got the United Nations, you know, who call so many shots, the WHO, et cetera, et cetera. But I think your point is extremely well made, that you end up realizing that the silver lining is what matters the most is you, your family, your friends, your community. And then after that, you can start deciding what's important. You're absolutely correct. And I think that's a really great, it's a great way of suggesting sovereignty. Ultimately, that's what it is.
Yeah. Music's playing there. I don't know what's happening.
Ah, the music is playing because we are in our last minute. So
I don't want to start launching into another point here.
Yeah. All right, Rick, let's quickly then come in for the landing. Your show is when?
Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. UK time. Do your sums from there, wherever you are in the world. But Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. UK time. Locked and loaded. You're very welcome to tune in and hear what I have to say to my own guests. And thank you, Jeremy, for giving me the microphone this afternoon.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. Rick Munn, thank you for joining me in the trenches. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas on TNT Radio.